human.
Hello and welcome to episode 122 of Popcorn and Prosecco, a show that's all about talking about movies. I am Perry Nemiroff and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hey, everybody.
So we have a supersized Secret Life of Pets episode for you. First, we're going to do our official review of the movie, and then we're going to discuss its insanely high box office opening weekend. So let's jump into it with the review. I am hosting that one. Here is the always brilliant IMDb synopsis. A terrier named Max's quiet life is upended when his owner takes in Duke, a stray whom Max instantly dislikes. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fine. So this is adorable. If you've listened to this podcast for even two episodes in your entire life, you probably know that I am absolutely obsessed with my cat. So is Angie. Christy admires from afar. But if you are a pet lover, I'm pretty sure that it's impossible to dislike this movie. That's the basic premise of it. But then something happens where they don't get along and they get lost. And it's this whole thing with the dog catchers. And it's a really kind of convoluted, silly, running around Manhattan plot. But at the core of it, it's, you know, it's really about how much pets love their owners in a way. And if you have a pet, it's impossible not to connect with that. And oh, where it ends up is just so heartwarming and makes you want to run home out of the theater and hug your pet, which might be exactly what I did to Dewey. And he's looking at me like I'm crazy right now. But oh, I love this movie. I love pets. I want more of this.
It's funny because we actually got to record this like right after. Perry has just come home from seeing Secret Life of Pets.
I'm a little overwhelmed by it too, because a good chunk of the movie is about how sad pets get when you leave them. And not only am I leaving for Star Wars Celebration in like 2 days, but then I'm leaving him for Comic-Con. Oh, I'm so sad now every time. Now I'm going to picture him doing those things when I'm gone.
See, you guys say that, but okay. So after Christy and I saw it together, and after we walked out, this whole movie is about like what pets get up to that like humans don't know about when we're not looking, right?
The secret life, if you will,
yes,
of pets.
So then Christy and I walked around, and like while we were like walking to the subway, like every dog that we saw, we were like, I know you're up to something.
We were definitely side-eyeing every animal.
That's like, exactly what I was doing when I was walking down the street back to the apartment. It's just like I've always known there's so many dogs around my neighborhood, but I was actually taking note of every single one, and like some of them had like little cute hairdos, and I'm like, I just picture you being like Gidget. Like I just saw this one gigantic black dog with this really goofy bow on the top of its head, and I must have just stopped dead in my tracks and stared at it smiling, and its owner thinks I'm a psychopath now.
Well, it's also good to hear, because Perry, this was one of your most anticipated movies of the summer, and we know that two of your other most anticipated movies, The Purge 3, Purge Election Year, and Independence Day Resurgence, were not your favorites.
What a lineup of most anticipated movies of the summer. They all go together really well. This made me feel a lot better. I wouldn't call this the greatest movie ever, but it gets the job done. Its heart is in the right place. It really, truly, I'm not just saying this, speaks to anyone who is a pet owner.
Yeah, I mean, one of the most frequent comparisons I've seen is that people are comparing it a lot to Toy Story, and for pretty obvious reasons. Like, the plot is basically, it's basically the same premise as the original Toy Story. And so some critics I've seen are kind of dinging it for like, well, I don't know, it's not as good as Pixar. And it's not. Like, I don't think it reaches those emotional heights. Like, I don't think the characters are as rich or anything like that. But at the same time, like, I feel like this is such a solid, like, comedy to watch with your family. Like, I don't think it's something that adults necessarily will find a lot of depth in, but you know, if you like pets, you might still enjoy it. And I really think it's a comedy that, like, it's a family comedy. It is definitely something that you can watch with like your 5-year-old niece and like your 80-year-old uncle, and everyone will go and everyone will find something to enjoy, and no one will be like unhappy or pissed off or confused.
Totally. And I think the thing is that this year we had Zootopia, we had Finding Dory, which are not just animated movies for kids, but also taking on grander concepts. Like Zootopia was a lot about racial relations, and then you have Finding Dory, which was really about kind of like what it is to be special needs, what it means to love someone who has special needs. And this is just about pets. Like, there's not a lot of subtext.
And sometimes that's what you want. Sometimes totally. You want to walk into an animated movie and not be like, I'm gonna walk out like crying and thinking about the world.
I was so grateful, especially there's a lot of very stressful news out there now, it was a real joy to get to sit down and just watch, like, dogs and cats being silly and fun. And, like, I actually think they do a really great job with the voice talent in this movie. Because Louis C.K., there's one part where he plays the terrier Max. And I'm not one of those people that thinks that Louis C.K. is the greatest thing ever. He's fine, whatever. But there's one scene where Max is so furious about this new dog that he runs to his owner. And he's, like, yelling. He's, like, he's frightening and he's scary and he's the death of all good things. And in that moment, I was like, oh, Louis C.K. is absolutely perfect to play, like, an erotic New York dog. Like, that was really perfect and funny. And he made the character able to walk this edge where Max does stuff that's, like, dick moves. But, like, Louis C.K. is kind of instantly affable. So it's, like, it allows for you to understand that Max is being a jerk, but to not think of him as a bad dog. It's very sweet.
Kevin Hart was actually a really great casting choice in this, too. I thought he was going to annoy me. He didn't annoy me at all. I thought he actually fit that character that he plays Snowball, the crazy bunny who's kind of after Max. And, like, he's just off his mind. And it suits Kevin Hart's tendency to do that really high-pitched yelling thing.
Yeah.
I feel like nobody else could have played that character the same way.
Oh, I totally get that. My thing with Kevin Hart is that I feel like he's doing the same thing again and again and again. It's like, to me, like, Ben Stiller's the same way, where they're not the same niche, but, like, Ben Stiller always does this, like, neurotic everyman, and Kevin Hart always does this, like, small man yelling thing a lot. So, like, him playing the tiny rabbit, I get that it's funny, but it's also just, like, I feel like you could plug him.
Well, he is a small man who yells a lot.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, but I'm saying, I feel like you could plug and play any one of his performances from any movie into this role, and it's just the same thing. So, like, I'm kind of, like, over that. I preferred the performances of some of the other characters. Also, I felt like his character is just basically, like, the design and, like, the yelling and stuff felt like it was pulled directly from The Emperor's New Groove when Yzma gets turned into a kitten at the end. I just want to throw that out there, because if you look at it, there's a lot of similarities there.
I've only ever seen that movie once, and I don't remember any of it.
I've seen so many times. But yeah, sorry, Angie wanted to talk about
an animal. Ben Stiller's a weird choice, because I feel like Dodgeball and Zoolander don't fit the description that you said at all, or Tropic Thunder. But okay, I see what you mean about Kevin Hart.
Can I guess which one you're going to talk about?
I think you know.
Jenny Slate.
Yes!
She's amazing.
She plays this, like, this dog who a Pomeranian who is friends with Max and has a crush on him, and she's the one that, like, when she figures out that Max and Duke have gone missing, she's the one that, like, spearheads the mission to go find him. And she is fantastic. Like, I mean, if you've seen, like, Marcel the Shell or anything, like, you know Jenny Slate can do, like, voiceover, like, really well. And I thought that her character was just, like, really fun and exciting. And she at one point she befriends a hawk played by
Albert Brooks.
Yep. And I feel like their weird friendship, where he kind of wants to kill her but also kind of wants to be her friend, is, like, one of the best running subplots in the movie.
That might be one of the best scenes in the entire film, too.
When he's, like, imagining them being friends.
That simple one-on-one conversation where they first meet on the roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love that part.
I like the fantasy sequence that Angie was referencing, where she basically promises him that if he doesn't eat her and helps her find her would-be boyfriend, they can be friends. And he has, like, a fantasy sequence imagining what that would be. And it's so delicious and hilarious. And, like, Jenny Slate is another one where she can do, like, that really girly, like high-pitched voice, but then she gets into this, like, angry zone, and it's hilarious. And there's, like, one part where she's, like, bitch-slapping a hairless cat, and she's like, don't look at him, you look at me! And, like, I was in tears. I was laughing so hard. It's just really funny. But I also just want to give a shout-out to Lake Bell, because I feel like Lake Bell, it's a subtler performance. She plays a cat named Chloe. But every time she spoke, I was cracking up, because, like, Chloe is just exactly what you would imagine a cat caricature to be, where she's, like, apathetic and, like, she cares but won't show it. And there's, like, one part where she says to Max, like, look, I'm your friend, so I'm going to be honest with you. I don't care about you or your problems. And, like, from that moment on, I was just obsessed with Chloe.
My favorite Chloe moment is when she's kind of giving a pep talk, trying to, like, help convince the other animals to get on board. And she's talking to a bird, and she's like, when you almost got eaten by that random cat, like, who saved you? And they were like, you are the one that almost ate him. And she's still like, eh.
She's like, the identity of the random cat is not relevant to this conversation.
Yeah. I also quite enjoyed Dana Carvey as Pops. He's the, I think he's a basset hound, and mm-hmm. he wheels around because he is paralyzed. And there were, I thought I was going to have a hard time looking at that. He has a lot of really laugh out loud funny lines. I forgot exactly what he said now, but my whole theater erupted when they walk into the sewer. Mm. And he's like, someone says, oh, this smells. And he goes, it smells like duty or something. And I swear every single kid was just like dying for the next 10 minutes. I was sitting right in between two grown adults who were also there by themselves. And everyone was just cracking up for like the next 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, it's just a very silly movie. And it's like the jokes are not especially deep or whatever. I did like that there's like some references to other New York movies. Like there's like a shot that's like right out of Manhattan, which I thought was kind of cute.
New York looks absolutely beautiful in this movie.
Yeah.
That was something
I
really appreciated.
It also looks nothing like New York, you guys. Like,
I don't care. It does, but it that is like, how I'm going to picture New York from now on.
Yeah, no, it looks like New York in a children's book, because it has the skyline and stuff, and the skyline's dead on. It's just that they make all the buildings, like, they crank up the contrast on the colors and stuff a bit more, so instead of everything looking like silver and blue, it's like, there's like reds and yellows, and it's beautiful.
And I know this is not really relevant, but this movie's also like, yes, a 20-something-year-old woman living alone can totally afford a giant apartment near Central Park that's big enough to house one gigantic dog and like, another dog. And I'm like,
because Duke is part Snuffleupagus. He is a huge dog.
Yeah. I mean, like, okay, so basically, like, you know, I feel like this movie, it's not reinventing anything. It's not like, you know, there's nothing particularly original or groundbreaking about it, but I feel like this is one of those movies where you're like, look, it's a formula, but there's a reason this formula works. It's a really good execution of the formula. It's solid, it's funny, like, it's, you know, it's paced really well, so that I never got like bored or like started to be like, or, you know, overwhelmed. I think it's actually one of Illumination Entertainment's like better releases.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. There are other movies like Despicable Me and Minions I find fine, but never feel the need to watch them again. I would totally watch this again. It was just, it's like a nice pick-me-up. It's sweet and it's funny, and I think it is for most ages, though I want to warn, because some kids in our screening got really upset, there are a couple of moments that are pretty scary. Mm-hmm. One involves a giant viper with one fang that had a kid in our screening like losing his mind. And there's the climax can be a little scary. So I'm not saying I don't think you should take kids to see it, but if your kid is particularly sensitive, once they go into the sewer, kind of just watch out.
The part in the beginning where Duke is kind of mean, there were definitely a couple kids in my screening that were not pleased with that part either. Mm.
But it's not like Good Dinosaur level where, like, I didn't hear, like, my favorite thing, when I went to see Good Dinosaur in theaters with, like, the public, there was one part in the Good Dinosaur that was so upsetting that a child screamed out, "Someone cover my eyes!" Which,
aww.
In my mind, he was like holding a bucket of popcorn and had been told not to spill it, and so was like in distress, like needed some, but like.
But I mean, that's one of the things I mean about also the pacing, though. It's just like, I feel like this movie knows exactly what it is, and it hits the target like really well. It's executed. It's not doing anything radical, but it's executed really well. And even the scary parts, like the movie moves on from them pretty quickly, so it's not like we're ever stuck in a moment that's like really dark or really harrowing or anything. And it goes off on some like really funny tangents, like the hawk and the dog like fantasy sequence that we mentioned earlier. There's also an extended montage at like a sausage factory that is like, really that weird. It feels like it literally feels like it's out of the movie Sausage Party, which is
I was gonna say all I kept thinking about that entire sequence is just wait until people see Sausage Party, because that's actually the anti-Sausage Party.
Yeah. I saw
you couldn't have two polar opposite movies about sausages.
But I was just like, what are the odds that in 1 year we're going to get two different, like, animated sausage things? Also,
that have
what are
musical
the odds
numbers.
In 1 year that we're going to have two movies about animals driving trucks? But I don't know. This is just a weird summer.
Agreed. Yeah, I think we're coming around about the time where we should wrap up. So is there anything we want to say?
I don't think it's not a movie that I feel like, you know, oh, go out of your way to see it. But especially if you're looking for something to do with kids, especially then, like, this is a really solid choice. It's, you know, it's good enough that it's not going to annoy adults. It's not one of those like obnoxious kids movies. It's not one of those like Sugar Rush kids movies like Minions, which I did enjoy. But that felt like I was like, oh, my God, I'm too old for this. So, yeah, this is a very, very solid choice.
I'm going to say if you have kids, if you are a pet owner, or if you are just bummed at the moment, you should go see this movie, because it will make you feel better. It is what it is. Like we said, it isn't anything more than that. It isn't particularly deep, but this is a very pleasant, happy way to spend 90 minutes of your life. So I think we need movies like this right now.
Totally agree. I think it's sweet. I think it's funny. And if you need to pick me up, you can't. It's probably one of the better ones out there, really. It's delicious. It's adorable.
Oh, yeah, that's the other thing, because this summer has been horrible for movies, which is a perfect segue into our hot topic, which is the fact that Secret Life of Pets did, like, crazy good at the box office. So according to Box Office Mojo, it set a record for the opening weekend for an original animated film. It got, $100 million?
Yeah, 103 right now.
Yeah, $103 million. I mean, like, so it's not, like, the best animated thing ever. Like, Dory did better, but that's a sequel. So it's really impressive that this has done really well. And especially, like, Illumination, I feel like, you know, they're getting there, but they're not, like, Pixar, where they're, like, this consistent brand that everyone knows about and thinks about and talks about constantly. I feel like part of it is just the fact that it's been a fucking weak year for movies. It's like, I mean, like, as both of you guys pointed out, if you're like, well, I want, like, a fun movie to watch, like, what's good and enjoyable and reliable, like, I mean, what the fuck are you gonna watch? Independence Day Resurgence? Like,
yeah.
This really just crushed everything. I mean, I'm looking at the charts now. If you look at the per theater average for this movie, it's over $23,000. The next one under that is, okay, well, if I'm going down the line at least, Mike and Dave need Wedding Dates, which actually did pretty well for that kind of movie, has like 5,500. That per theater average is like freaking through the roof.
Well, yeah. And you were just talking about how you went to a crowded screening, like packed.
A very crowded screening. Like, I barely got into this screening, and almost every single seat I saw it 10:30 in the morning on a Sunday. Packed theater, though. This is insane.
I think this
could be a major game changer for Illumination, because at this point, Illumination's only claim to fame is really the Minions.
Yeah.
If they could add another property, another big franchise property on that slate, put them a little further ahead than we might think.
And I feel like this film does a lot to kind of establish, like, their identity as a brand. Like, you know, like, one of the reasons that Pixar and Disney Animation do so well is people kind of know what to expect from movies put out by those studios. They're not, like, franchises like how Marvel or X-Men is a franchise, but it is, like, you know, it is a brand that people keep going back to. And I feel like Illumination is now kind of carving themselves out as, like, really solid all-ages entertainment, a little bit, like, less stressful than some Pixar movies, because those can be, like, very sad or very upsetting or, like, very crazy, and sometimes you don't want that. So I feel like they're carving out a space for themselves really well. And I also think it's notable that in a summer where we've seen so many sequels that were supposed to be sure bets just, like, fall flat on their faces, here's an original movie that's doing really well.
Totally.
That actually seems to be the trend, though, because then you could look at a movie like The Shallows. You know,
yeah.
Who knew that was going to do pretty well, but it did.
That's a good point. I think the nice thing about this, Angie and I were talking on the way home, like, I think this is setting up really well for a sequel. Secret Life of Pets could easily do another adventure, and it wouldn't necessarily have to be with the same pets. I think they would do that, though, because that tends to be what movies do. But, like, they could totally go on another adventure. There's, like, enough, they've created a fun enough world and a, like, lively enough world that there's other stories that could be told here. So I think that's really fun. I honestly would probably watch a whole story about Bobby Moynihan's little pug, who, like, is just super high energy, and at one point he tries to explain about it. He's basically explaining what it's like to go on an airline. He's like, I ate this little brown pill, thing with a pill in it, and I woke up in Florida. And they're like, you're making things up. That doesn't make any sense. He's like, no, I woke up, and I was in the sky. And, like, that was all adorable.
Illumination is actually set up to have a pretty good year, because they've also got, in case you did not see the giant ad plastered across the back of the bus in the movie Life of Pets, they've got Sing coming up, which is another, it's another movie that I don't think looks like anything game-changing, but it's just basically like American Idol with animals, with cute animals. It's got another all-star voice cast. Like,
I don't know why you gotta talk shit on that. That sounds like my favorite thing.
They played that trailer before my screening today, and the entire time it's playing, I was kind of sitting there like a jerk, like, I don't want to like this. This is stupid. And then by the end of it, I had cracked so many smiles that, you know, all of a sudden, I'm thinking, I'll see that in December, okay. Whatever.
You like Karen Edgerton, you will be into that.
I won't say anything else about that movie, because I'm not going to review a movie that we haven't seen and aren't going to see until December, but yeah, no, the trailers aren't doing it for me.
Yeah, don't be that person.
Well, yeah. that's That's Illumination going big, too, because that movie comes out, I believe it's Christmas weekend.
It's Christmas.
And December 21st.
And it's kind of perfect, because I feel like that's, like, two times the year when you need, like, the movie that everyone in your family can watch together
yeah,
is
totally.
Summer and Christmas. And you're just like, yay, now Illumination's got me covered.
Well, it seems like Illumination could fill the void that's happening thanks to Blue Sky right now. I mean, for all I know, the next Ice Age movie will be great, but
they're losing
their footing quite a bit.
They do consistently pretty well at the box office, but I think it's starting to kind of like, I think that franchise is on the decline a little, and they've never gotten much like in the way of buzz. Like every time a new one comes out, I feel like people who don't have kids are just like, oh, I didn't know they were still doing this.
I was completely astonished to find out there was a fifth one of those movies.
Did the last one do well?
They did okay.
I guess it's international. I see it right now. Ice Age Continental Drift made $161 million domestically. And then, wait for this, it made $715 million at the international box office. That's like not just big. That's freaking huge.
I told you those movies. Like no one gets excited about them. No adults, no critics, but they do consistently really well. Like
they are the Transformers of the animation world.
I guess so, but yeah. I feel like people also don't hate them as much as they hate Transformers.
I liked the first one, and then it just started to get kind of silly, stupid from there.
I don't think that Secret Life of Pets doing well necessarily means like, oh, you know, it's going to be all original movies from now on. But I think it is. I think it does. I find it encouraging to see that a movie that's not a sequel can do well. It's like, hey, people, have you considered maybe not just putting out another Alice in Wonderland sequel that no one asked for, instead doing something kind of original? It'll be okay.
So. Agreed.
Yeah, we're all pumped about Secret Life of Pets. So, I guess that's it. Go see it. That's a wrap on episode 122 of Popcorn and Prosecco. You know where to find us. We are on iTunes, where you can rate and subscribe and comment. We have our website, popcornprosecco.com. We are on Twitter, @PopcornProsecco. Please like us on Facebook as well. And then all three of us are all over the internet. Angie, you want to take it first?
Sure. You can find me on Twitter, @AJHAN. And you can find my writing at slashfilm.com.
Christy?
You can find me on Twitter, @KristyPuchko, that's KristyPuchko, and I write all over the interwebs, so you can find my career highlights at DecadentCriminals.com.
And you can catch me on Twitter and Instagram, @PNemiroff. I'm on Collider.com, the Collider Videos YouTube channel, and that's about it. So, thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.